Good afternoon and welcome into Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hope you're having a good one. It got cold this week. It got cold. Love it, though. Gotta enjoy the few days of winter that we get here in South Carolina. Of course, it's early this year, isn't it? I mean, this is just November, mid-November, and we're this cold. Of course, you can't tell. You cannot make any predictions on weather based on what time of the year. Not around here, you can't. It's just always changing, always different. But anyway, hope you're having a good day. I got to start this off. When I was at CIFWA, there was a company there called Voss Signs. And, you know, they make all sorts of signs and, you know, for the outdoor industry, I guess for anything. But anyway, a couple there just funny. Here's a good one. Open. Most days about 9 or 10. Occasionally as early as 7. Sometimes as late as 12 or 1. Closed. Most days about 5:30 or 6. Occasionally around 4 or 5. Sometimes as late as 11 or 12. Sometimes we aren't here at all. Lately, I've been here all the time, except when I'm someplace else. Kind of like a little fishing pole there. And then there's this other one. And it really, you're not going to get the brunt of it because it's just notice. And the notice is spelled N-O-T-I-S. Trespassers would be persecuted to the full extent of two mongrel dogs, which never was over sociable to strangers, and one double barrel shotgun, which didn't loaded with soft pellets. If I didn't get tired of this hell raising on my place. So, a little levity. Not enough of that in the world today. But anyway, figured you could do with some of it. All right, let's get the calendar of events out of the way. Not that it's something I don't look forward to, but we'll get a few things here. And as always, brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center, the Tom Yawkey Wildlife Center, which is down on the coast. Youth Appreciation Trip. Calling all kids. The Tom Yawkey Center is hosting a Youth Appreciation Trip on Saturday, November 9th. 16th. How does that? Oh, I see what happened. Okay. The print's off on the page a little bit. Okay. Trip on Saturday, November the 9th, November the 16th. Come and take a look at the Yawkey Wildlife Center, the way kids like it best, over the water and through the woods. Lots of cool things to see. The purpose of this trip is to get kids interested in the outdoors, so each adult must be accompanied by a child. There's a little different spin on it for you. You can go to their website and get more information on it. And actually, well, the day before, there's a Paint the Tom Yawkey Wildlife Center. That's for artists. You want to go down there and paint, you can go paint. And there's a couple more things that I'm going to get to later on. A walk-through history experiences off-the-bus opportunity to take a closer look at some of the historic sites on the Tom Yawkey Wildlife Center. Sites visited include a former sawmill along Winya Bay and Civil War fortifications. The activity level of this trip is strenuous with several miles of walking involved. Participants should bring a bag, lunch, and drink. That's on November the 19th. So they got a calendar of things that are going on all the time, and they do birding down there, photo safari. So I'll get to more of these. But anyway, check them out. Tom Yawkey Wildlife Center. Fridays in November. I think I already said this once. Coastal Expeditions. It's an alligator walk through Cape Romaine. You go to Bull's Island and you walk the levees. And it says in recent weeks we've seen purple gannules, great blue herons, green herons, terns, gulls, kingfishers, more than in the area. The alligators are sunning along the banks by the dozens. And so they're offering these walks on Fridays in November. So the 15th, 22nd, and 29th is what you've got left. And you can go down there and check out a alligator. And that, again, is Coastal Expeditions through them. Sporting Clays Tournament. This is one you've heard me talk about my niece and being paralyzed and all, and we stayed, or her family stayed, and we stayed at the Ronald McDonald House in Atlanta while she was at Scottish Rites in rehab. But this is a Sporting Clays Tournament. It's held every year. This is the 13th annual Sporting Clays Tournament. It's November the 16th at Hermitage Farms in Camden, South Carolina. First flight's at 9 o'clock, second flight's at 12 o'clock. The Ronald McDonald House Charities Columbia, South Carolina will host the 13th annual Sporting Clays Tournament on Saturday, November the 16th. The tournament will take place at Hermitage Farms in Camden. We'd love to have you join us for a fun-filled day of rotating through 14 challenging sporting clay stations along with an exciting raffle. The registration is $125. Includes a 100-bird main event, 12 or 20-gauge ammunition, food, beverages, gifts, and awards. And then, of course, they got raffle. It's a fundraising thing for a great cause. So check them out, Ronald McDonald House Charities, Columbia, South Carolina, and get more information on this. And I hope you'll go support a cause. I know a bunch of friends of mine just fished the fishing tournament in Charleston. Just left me. Having more of those these days than ever. Anyway, find a charity and get behind it, especially if it's outdoors related. Those are the ones that really mean a lot. Outdoor Dream Foundation is one that comes to mind. But there's plenty of them out there. And that's the calendar event brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center, which I was down there this past weekend for the Bass Nation Team Championship. And we'll have some more of that on the show. You'll have to stay tuned. And we're also going to talk to Mike Dillon with Richard Childress Racing. He's going to talk about the Striped Bass Challenge. And that's coming to Lake Hartwell January the 4th. And there's another opportunity to go fishing, have fun, win some money, win some prizes for a good cause. And I'm sure Mike will talk all about that. Couple of notes here from the U.S. Forest Service. Reminds non-hunters to stay safe this hunting season. This is something that just doesn't even cross my mind because I'm in that hunting frame and just not a second thought. But I want to remind you, before you head on a hike in a national forest this fall, it's important to know that nearly all the national forest lands in North Carolina and South Carolina are open to hunting. The last thing you want while out hunting or biking the trails is to be mistaken for game. So to avoid any confusion, the National Forest Service encourages everyone to take these precautions to stay safe during hunting season. Number one, wear bright colored clothing. You know, normally you say an orange vest, that's for hunters, but you know, orange, neons, whatever it takes to be more invisible, don't wear brown and white together. If you have a dog, make sure it wears a vest, bandana, or is on leash. Number two, make noise to alert hunters of your presence. If you hear shooting, raise your voice to let hunters know that you are nearby. And number three, if hunting makes you uneasy, learn about where and when hunting is taking place and consider hiking in other areas. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. On the flip side, for hunters, if you're hunting on, you know, national forest or state game lands, multi-use lands is what we call them, where you got people that are horseback riding and biking and hiking and all that, be very considerate. Don't let people get right up under you before you say, hey, give them some notice, you know, let them know you're there. Be considerate. We all have to share the same amount of territory and the same resources, and it's a two-way street. So just for those of you non-hunters, be aware that it is hunting season. Wear some bright colored clothes. For you hunters, be on the lookout for that. It's our more than their responsibility, it's our responsibility. We need to know exactly what we're looking at, which is where having binoculars comes in. You got to have a pair of binoculars. You never want to point that gun at something. Use your scope to identify it. Use your binoculars. Know what you've got, you know. Know if it's somebody's dog that just happened to run away and get caught up in the moment and just enjoy being out in cold weather. So, it's on both sides. Both of us need to take care and look out for the other. So, here's your first segment. Hang on through the break. We're going to talk with... we're going to hear about the Bass Nation Championship, talk to Mike Dillon, and then I got a few other things to wrap up the show. So hang on through the break. More Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. You know, I told you we're going to hear more about the Bass Nation Championship that's held on Lake Hartwell this past weekend. Cody Holland won it. He's from Beaverton, Oregon. The West Coast people showed out. Spokane Valley, Washington, Taylor Smith came in second. Then Cam Starrett from Newfields, New Hampshire came in third. And, you know, I've gotten the interview from Cody. It's actually done by Andrew Canuleta. He did the interview. I just didn't want the guys to have to answer pretty much the same questions two times in a row within minutes of each other. So I just stuck my voice recorder in there, and it's pretty good. He's 35 years old. He's, you know, he's just an ordinary guy. Fishes, like to fish, fished, you know, out there in Spokane Valley, Washington, or Beaverton, Oregon. I think he qualified through the Washington Loop, but, he got the big thing for all three of those guys is they got birth to the 2020 Academy Sports and Outdoors Bassmaster Classic presented by Huck on Gunnersville. Cody also won a Skeeter Yamaha Cash Award of $20,000, an invitation to fish the 2020 Bassmaster Elite Series, and paid entry into the Bass Pro Bassmaster Opens division of his choice. So it's a pretty big deal. There were 59 boaters, 115 total anglers who competed over the 3 days on Hartwell. They were from 47 states, 11 foreign countries, and the total purse was over $140,000. So pretty big deal for three guys to come to Lake Hartwell and punch their tickets to the Bassmaster Classic. And that's how you have the ordinary guy who just likes to fish, and he does some weekends in his home state, you know, wins, he qualifies for something like this, the Nationals, and he comes here and qualifies for the Classic, kind of like the Cinderella story, you know? And I'm looking forward to watching him on the Gunnersville. I'll watch all three of them on Gunnersville next year. So let's, like I said, I got the interview with Cody. Andrew Canuleta is doing it. I was asking him his last name. He said, "Can you let me?" It's Canuleta. And so listen to it. Come back and I'll finish out the segment.
Cody, the champ.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
Thank
man.
Thank you.
How old are you?
35.
You live in Beaverton?
Yes, sir.
And you're here with, you were qualified through Oregon. Yeah. So, big bag of the day, 10th place, and all of a sudden, a much richer man, and you know, both, I guess, in what's in your pocket and what's in your heart, because the Classic has got to be a special thing for you.
Yes, sir.
Let's kind of separate the two. What's it like to win this tournament? Tell me what you had to do. What got that big bag?
I had confidence coming into today. I looked at my Marshall, and I was like, I showed him the lipless crankbait I was using. I go, every bigger fish that I caught have been on this. So I pulled up to a cane pile, and I threw at it, tried it from a different direction, didn't get bit. So I pulled out of that pocket I was in and out to another point and threw at that one, and I lost a decent fish off of that one. Never got bit off of that cane pile in practice or either one of the other 2 days. So for whatever reason, a light bulb went off, and I had five or six cane piles marked way down lake where the water was actually cleaner down there than what it is up here. I don't think it's quite turned over down there.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they were in those cane piles. Yeah. I was setting myself up probably about 30 yards back and casting to them.
Okay.
And it would hit the cane pile or come right by the cane pile, and the thing would just stop. It was nuts.
So they were hitting hard.
Yeah, yeah, it was crazy. I had one that had it all the way down his throat.
Wow, almost like in a feeding frenzy,
yeah.
It sounds like.
Yep.
Spots?
All spots.
You caught spots all week long?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Tell me specifically what you were throwing towards those cane piles.
It is a Yozuri lipless crankbait. They don't make it anymore.
Oh.
I only have two of them. And last night when I made... the final day, I looked at my girlfriend, and I go, I got to grab that other one in case I lose this one.
Yeah.
So I grabbed it. It's in the boat. I never lost the one that I threw all week.
Might go to see somebody about pouring a couple more of those.
Yeah, or try to find some more. I mean, they're almost $20 on eBay, so.
Oh, well, you got some extra cash to pick up that,
yep.
Man.
I do
take
now.
Take care of a few of those little crankbaits.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Yep.
Stick with what works. So the water was clear where you were.
Yeah, it was, I would say, I went over the top of a cane pile on accident one I was trying to fish. And I looked down, and it was this far underneath the water.
Yeah.
So every one, I think every one I was throwing to was 2 to 4 feet underneath the water, because I was reeling that thing pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And it would either hit it, or it would come just along the side of it, and they were coming up out of it and just annihilating it.
And that was today. What were you doing on day one and two?
So yesterday I caught my two better fish on that bait.
Okay.
I ran around an island, and I went across a couple cane piles, and I was like, huh, that's probably what that fish came off of. I ran across another one. Well, that's what that fish came off of, and, you know, nothing clicked at that point.
Yeah.
But I ran back today and fished around that island, never got bit. But that's what
it seemed like the bait was really key.
Yeah, it was.
Very nice. To get the big bag today and to move up from 10th, when you start the day, what's your gut tell you? Do you say, look, I got to do something special, or do you say, I'm fishing for third plate? I mean, what do you think?
My marshal was an awesome guy. I looked at him at about 11:30. I seen my buddies. They were out there. They came and watched me for a little bit.
Nice.
And I looked at him, and I go, if I'm going to win this thing, I'm going to win it on this. I put both of my drop shot rods away, and I left an underspin and a lipless on the deck, and that was it. And that's all I did for the last 2.5 hours of the day. And all the 5 of those fish that I weighed in were caught in the last 2.5 hours of the day.
Really? So you were you getting bites early, or did you just call up?
I got bites. I ran to the spot that I had been getting a limit out of every morning, and it was actually a little bit of a struggle. I did catch 5 fish there, but that's all that I caught. Normally, I was catching probably 7 to 8 fish and culling 2 or 3 times before I would leave there.
Yeah.
And when I left there with 5 fish for like 5 pounds, I go, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I just started running down lake, and I wasn't getting the better bites on a drop shot. I was, you know, I could catch 9 to 10 pounds a day on a drop shot, and the bigger fish were eating that lipless, and I would just, for whatever reason, had the gut instinct to just put those down and start throwing that, and only that.
And it worked.
Yep.
Classic. What goes through your brain there?
Dream come true. 100% dream come true. I have no idea anything about Gunnersville, but I'm going to go and give 110% and hope for the best.
That's all you can do.
Yep.
Pretty cool to be there and watch that happen. Much an ordinary guy, punch a ticket to the Bassmaster Classic. Pretty cool. Big event. He said several times, he goes, I just disbelief. Just can't believe it. Just, you know, wow. Thanks for Andrew. Can you let me? Can you let me put my voice recorder in front of you and record your interview? I told him I would let him, give him plenty of credit for it. And it's going to be fun. In the same vein with fishing, while we're on fishing, I've had these for a while now. The all 3 pro tours are out, you know, even with the acquisition of FLW, nothing changed there. So let's just run through in the couple minutes we've got here. Let's run through this right quick. All right, the Bassmaster schedule for the 2020 Elite Series, February 6th through 9th, St. John's River, Palatka, Florida. They were there last year. It was a great tournament. February the 14th through 17th. Oh, it says TBA. I know I'll have to look it up during the break, but I'll let you know because they did assign that, and I think it went to Texas. Oh, man. Anyway, old story. I need to get a new one. March 6th through 8th, the Bassmaster Classic, Lake Gunnersville, Birmingham, Alabama. April the 2nd through the 5th, Lake Eufaula, Eufaula, Alabama. April 16th through the 19th, Santee Cooper Lakes, Manning, South Carolina. The elites are coming back to South Carolina. Gonna fish a really cool one. Interesting, we'll have to get Patrick Walter's take on that one. May 29th through June 1st, Sabine River, Orange, Texas. And June 5th through 9th, Texas Fest. July 23rd to 26th, St. Lawrence River, Waddington, New York. You know, they signed a 3-year deal to go back there for the next 3 years. July 30th through August 2nd, Lake Champlain, Plattsburgh, New York. And then the 20th through the 23rd of August on Lake St. Clair is the AOY Championship. I believe that would be right. Yep. All right. MLF announced their schedule not a week or so ago. February 7th through the 12th, Eufaula, Alabama. So they're going to the place, same place the elites went to. February 21st through the 26th, Okeechobee, Florida. Be stage 2. March 13th through the 18th is Lake Fork, Texas. Emory, Texas. April 3 through 8, Jordan Lake, Falls Lake, Sheeran Harris Reservoir in Raleigh, North Carolina. I know that's one Anthony Gagley already wants a redo over from last year. So they're going back there. May 15th through the 20th, Kissimmee. Kind of odd to go in Florida that late in the year because normally everybody starts off there in January, February. So that'll be an interesting one. June the 5th through the 10th, Neenah, Wisconsin. That's Lake Winnebago, Budamonts, and Green Lake. Stage 7 is June 26th to July 21st, St. Lawrence River, Odensburg, New York. And Lake Champlain, July 21 through 26th is Stage 8, Burlington, Vermont. They have not released the date or the location for the Red Crest yet. So we'll wait on that one. And the FLW schedule for this year, they're starting out Sam Rayburn Reservoir, January 23rd through the 26th. Harris Chain of Lakes in Florida, February 20th through 23rd. Lake Martin, March 19th through the 22nd. That's in Alabama, Alexander City. Cherokee Lake, April 2 through 5. Jefferson City, Tennessee. That was a good tournament when the elites went there a couple years ago, I guess. April 23rd through the 26th, going to be right down the road to Lake Hartwell, Anderson, South Carolina. May 14th through the 17th, Lake Dardanelle in Russellville, Arkansas. And then to finish out the season, June 25th through 28th, Detroit River, Trenton, Michigan. So, which is funny because you've got them, the dates are on top of each other. I already put them in my phone, and they're overlapping a lot. They are going to some of the same lakes, following each other around a little bit. And it's really going to be interesting. With MLF acquisition of FLW, which was final this past week, got a press release saying that it was a done deal. It's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see who from FLW or MLF tries to fish the opens to qualify for the elites. That's going to really tell the story of who's happy with what on the current three series tournament trail. And then we got the fourth one coming in 2021 or something like that. I don't even want to think about that one. But there you go. So look them up, put them in your calendar, and get ready to glue yourself to your computer for Bass Live and MLF Live and FLW Live and get all the fishing you can stand. All right, hang out through the break. More Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. As promised and on the phone with us live is Mr. Mike Dillon from Richard Childress Racing. Mike, how are you doing these days?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well. But before we get on to the fishing stuff, how are things going this year in NASCAR for you? I haven't been keeping up like I normally do. And just fill us in. What's the latest and greatest?
Well, we're getting ready to head to Homestead. It's our final race of the year. We definitely need to perform better than what we have of late, but we got a lot of high ambitions and got something new going down there. So hopefully we'll be able to finish the year with a really strong run and get ready for the 2020 season.
I got you. Well, this is the 50th year of RCR racing. Congratulations.
It sure is. Yeah, it's really awesome. Richard's put his whole life into this, into racing, and it's been a blessing to all of us, our family, and everything else. So it's a wonderful sport, and we're very proud to be a part of it.
And I wanted to thank you last year when you had Neil and I come up and visit. I wanted to thank you for taking us on a little sightseeing tour and getting that close to all the history of RCR.
Well, yeah, we're proud of RCR and all the history that we've made in NASCAR. And then just being able to show people what it's about. Most of the time, people are very surprised when they come and see our facility there in Welcome, North Carolina.
Yep. I was. It was a really cool experience. And actually, I got another kind of little experience like that. We were out in Springfield, Missouri for the Bass Fishing Hall of Fame induction, and there's a little segment for Bass Pro Shops and their NASCAR, all their cars and uniforms and all that. That was pretty cool, too. I didn't know you had all that out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Johnny has been a part of our organization for as long as, you know, pretty much about as long as he's been around.
Yep.
Bass Pro, And he's a very big part of our family and obviously a part of the Striped Bass Challenge fishing tournament also.
He is. And that's what we're here to talk about. Striped Bass Challenge, the 2020 Winter Classic, coming up January the 4th on Lake Hartwell, South Carolina. Now, while the fishing is the fun part of it, there's also a much bigger picture and a much bigger mission for the Striped Bass Challenge, and that is, you tell us.
That is our food drive. We, you know, we work with Feeding America, which is a nationally all across the country food bank or food organization, and provide meals for folks that can't get a good meal every night or every day.
Yep.
And in the Anderson area, Golden Harvest is one of their subsidiaries, and that's who we work with there. And all of our anglers.
One.
And all of our anglers. We'll bring food in or cash donations for raffle tickets. And then they'll get their raffle tickets. I mean, we've had guys bring in over 3,000 pounds, individuals, of food. Their boats are just flush full of non-perishable food. And they obviously got a bunch of raffle tickets.
Yeah.
And then we give away some great prizes with all of our product sponsors, Grizzly Coolers. Pure Fishing donates over 50 fishing rods, Ugly Stick fishing rods. We have Shimano gives us reels. We have Bass Pro Shops, obviously. We have gift cards from Bass Pro Shop, thousands of dollars worth of gift cards. We have fishing rod and reel combinations. Bet's Net has been a supporter from day one. All these folks have been with us from the beginning, too.
Right.
That's what's really awesome, that how long they've been with us. And we got clear water planer boards. We got, I'm just trying to sit here off the top of my head and think about everybody. We got Johnson Outdoors.
Yes.
Johnson Outdoors and Bill Carson there. They give us Minn Kota trolling motors,
Hummingbird
rod holders.
Yep.
Hummingbird. Just the list goes on of all the great products that we have to give away. We got Costa sunglasses. We got, we get 20 or 25 pair of those to give away. We get, it's actually just sitting here thinking about it. It's pretty, really amazing that these folks continue to support us like they do.
And I got to back up a minute because you said, you know, guys are coming with their boats just slammed full of food. Now, people, we're not talking about bass boats. Most of the time when you hear fishing tournaments, people think of bass boats, and, you know, you got the little well there between the two seats. No, we're talking about, you know, 21 or 24-foot center consoles or Carolina skiffs type, and those things are filled to the gunnels. So
yeah, they'll hold more than a pickup truck,
That's exactly right.
These guys are it's amazing. We did another small one up in High Rock, and the guys were there too, bringing the same kind of loads. And which is up here in Lexington, North Carolina. And talking to one of them, he said he brought 6,000 pounds.
Holy
smoke! You know, the last tournament at Green Pond, we had 57,000 pounds of food donated, and about somewhere around $7,000 to $8,000 in cash. So that was a great turnout. That was the last event, and it's just grown every year, you know. So this year, I'm hoping to get it to that, and maybe go over 60,000 pounds. You know, who knows?
Sure.
I know we provide a lot of meals for folks, and it's a good time. And then we have a little fishing tournament up the next day too.
Yeah, fishing tournament.
It pays out pretty well. You know?
20. Robin Jarrett sent me the flyer for it. $25,000 first place.
Yep, 25,000. Hell, second place is 10,000. I mean, you know, it pays all the way back to top 15, and we have the lady angler of the tournament who wins 2,000. The youth angler of the tournament gets $1,000 in gift cards for Bass Pro Shop. Or 1,500, I think it is, and we don't give them cash so they can keep their collegiate status.
Sure.
And then, but now Johnny Morris from Bass Pro.
Yeah.
Has also decided to step it up, and he's going to give the youth angler another big prize, and we're going to announce that here in next week.
Wow!
They're not only going to get their 1,500 gift cards; they're going to get another big prize, and like I said, it's a big one. So we're excited about that for the youth. You know, we want to get these kids outside and get them fishing, hunting and fishing. And, you know, it's the same way, you know, you guys doing the same thing with the, we got to, that's our next sportsman. And they're going to keep it up.
That's our future hunting heritage people and fishing heritage.
Right.
Yeah. And the article,
the
article, you know, in 4 years, you guys have supplies over 250,000 meals to Golden Harvest down here.
Yep. Yeah. I'm pretty proud of that. And, that's what, you know, what, and we've got some great sponsors to do that with obviously Bass Pro, American Ethanol, Easy Go. They do the Easy Go, gives a buggy for the big fish of the tournament.
Okay.
All of our sponsors, Realtree is one of our sponsors, Cometic Gaskets, and Klotz Oil. It just keeps going on. Hunt Brothers Pizza has been a strong one for us.
Food.
Yeah. And it just allows us to be able to have such a good purse.
Sure.
And then, you know, then what we give back, you know, what the anglers pay in the entry fee. So it's just it's a great event. So they don't mind coming out and pulling food in. And what's really cool is after the holidays, and I'd say after the holidays is when the food banks really need the support. Everybody, you know, they're probably tapped out. And then so we can restock, get them restocked for the start of the next year and hopefully go from there.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. Well, I got you on the phone, Mike. Who are these guys that fish these tournaments? Who are the striper guys? What I mean, I'm sure it's a mix of all sorts of guys, but who, you know, some of them. Who are they? What kind of guys are they?
Oh, they're everyday, you know, guys. They're work. There's all types of, you know, there's a blue collar guys that love to go fishing. You know, they're good people. They're from all over. I tell you that. We got guys from Michigan, Wisconsin that come down. We got guys from all over the southeastern states that come and fish. And then obviously the strong probably group is the South Carolina anglers. There's a bunch of them that support Hartwell, Lake Murray, and all around there. I've got some bunch of guys that come from North Carolina. There's some Tennessee and Virginia boys that fish. And the striper fisherman is they're pretty dedicated to it. You know, that's what they like to do. They troll. They like to troll live bait. You know, lures have been popular. There's a lot of guys that are really good at it. The tournament's actually been won on lures.
Wow.
it's just good people, you know, like to fish, like to catch a big fish. You know, stripers are probably the best way to keep them and keep them growing is we're big on trying to keep them alive, and we got a striper too. Warren Turner's a big who's been in the striper world for a long time. Most everybody knows who he is, and it has a striper tube, and we try to push those to keep people for people to use them. And the serious guys really do; they have them, and we've done really good. DNR can back us up on our mortality rate. Our percentages have been really good. You know, you're going to, when you catch these fish, you stress them out pretty good and you lose them some. But we have, with all the fish that we have weighed in, our percentages have been very low on mortality. And we do have in our entry, we own, when the fish comes out and it's weighed in, it's our fish. And we actually donate that fish to a local church there too.
Okay.
So that everything gets consumed if there is an issue with losing a fish. But everybody is, trying really hard to grow the species and work with the DNR there in South Carolina. And the South Carolina DNR, man, I can't say nothing but good things about those folks. They work really, really hard and close with us, great people, and they want the people to get out and fish and use our resources that God's give us.
Absolutely. They're a bunch of good people. I spend a lot of time with a lot of them, and I hadn't met a bad one yet. Well,
yeah, they really are.
Other than you can go to the Striped Bass Challenge Facebook page and read all about it there. There's a website you can go to. It's forum, forum.jotform.com, which is JOTFORM.com. And that's how you register. Pretty easy registration process. And, man, I look forward to seeing you guys here in South Carolina on June 3rd for the captain's meeting and the 4th for the tournament. Mike, I appreciate you taking time. And look forward to seeing you soon.
Well, thanks for having us, and I'll come back when I find out exactly what Johnny's going to do for the youth angler, and we'll do another little show if it's all right.
You let me know, and I'll put you back on the air, Mike.
Right on. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina, to the final segment of Woods and Water, South Carolina for November the 16th, 2019. If you didn't hear me talk about it last week, I believe it was last week, you can, the website, woodsandwatersc.com, I have updated for, okay, I have to update for practically all of my podcasts. I am Angelo at the station, and I are running down the last few. And I'm not going to worry about some of them, but I have 260-something on there now. Probably end up being 275, maybe close to 280. And then every week, I'm going to have those up there on the website every week as soon as I get them from the station. So if you missed it or you want to go back and see who you've missed in the past, and I promise you the interviews I hope are getting better. I know if you go back all the way to 14, yeah, you should notice a lot of improvement in the way I conduct the show. But yeah, they're up there, so I encourage you to go there and like I said, pick up ones you missed or you want to hear the one from last week again, or just see who I've interviewed in the past and have a good time with it. Mentioned this, I believe it was last week, historically high numbers of Americans approve of hunting. Now, this is important. In the last, I'm trying to think, is it in this one? Yeah, this is it. So this is a study released really. It came out October 23rd of 2019 from Kip Adams over at QDMA. And it's got some really incredible statistics in here. And it bodes both good and bad for hunting as our heritage or as an institution or however you want to look at hunting. But it starts out, the vast majority of Americans approve of hunting according to Responsive Management, an internationally recognized survey research firm in natural resource and outdoor recreation issues. And also, actually, I'm going to have somebody on talking about some of these research initiatives that I met down at CIFWA. And they did a study on new hunters and new gun owners. It was really interesting. So we're going to do that too. But just triggered my mind. Okay, a recent survey in conjunction with the National Shooting Sports Foundation revealed the current approval rating of hunting by Americans 18 years or older is the highest it's been since Responsive Management began monitoring approval rates in 1995. During the past 25 years, overall approval of hunting has steadily grown from 73 to 80%. During the same time frame, overall disapproval of hunting, get this, has declined even more rapidly from 22 to only 13%, which is really cool. And this study breaks down the approval ratings by year. So in 1995, the overall approval rating of hunting was 73%. In 2015, the overall approval rating was 79%, which was the highest on record. Then they repeated the 79% in 2016, and here in 2019, we're at 80%. In 1995, it was 22% disapproved of hunting. It dropped down, bounced back up in 2011 to 20%. And then it's been 12, 13, 14, and 13% for the last few studies, which is good news. Even though our hunting numbers, actual hunters are dropping, the approval numbers are up, the disapproval numbers are down. And I think that's due to a lot of effort on hunters themselves, you know, portraying hunting as good. The field to fork mentality, the organic meat mentality, you can overdo that. But I think you're seeing the impacts of this right here. Not all hunting is the same, though. Hunting for wildlife management, for the meat, and to protect humans from harm have the highest approval ratings at 82 to 85%. Conversely, hunting for sport is only approved by 50% of Americans. And approval for trophy hunting drops to a mere 29%. Not all species are viewed equally either. Deer and turkey hunting rank highest at 78% approval, while predators rank much lower with bears at 40 to 44% and mountain lions at only 38%. African lions and elephants receive the lowest ratings at only 7 to 14% approval. And that's simply because they don't know how it works down there. We up here have been enormously successful with the North American model of conservation. Hugely unduplicated across the world. Nobody has done a better job of doing what we've done than we have right here. In Africa, it totally works differently. And I'm not really going to take time to go into that because it's a whole different discussion. Maybe that's something for a future episode. Maybe that's for a future show is to get someone, an outfitter or someone in the research side or the conservation side and explain why Africa is different. And I think if more people knew why Africa is Africa, and I think that was a line right out of Africa, which was a great movie. I think those numbers would come up because it just works differently down there. And like I said, there are more charts and all in here. Percent that strongly approve or moderately approve of hunting each of the following species. Wild turkey, 78. Deer, 78. Duck, 74. Doves, 44, which surprises me. I think that's because people, you know, doves are bird of peace. The only thing you don't know is that the dove survival percentages are less than 80% per year or something like that. I've got the statistics somewhere. So their lifespan is not long enough. African lion, 14. African elephant, 7. Where you're from matters too, which is interesting. The Midwest region owns the highest hunting approval rating at 86%, followed by the Southeast at 82%, West at 77%, and Northeast at 73%. Other demographics also matter, as 87% of Caucasians approve of hunting, while only 62% of Hispanics do. 86% of males approve of hunting, while only 62% of females do. And 88% of Americans who grew up with firearms approve of hunting, while only 66% of those who didn't grow up with firearms do. And then it goes, it's just chock full of percentages and graphs and all. The full report, responsivemanagement.com. Look for the Americans Attitude Report PDF. You know, we can debate the nuances of hunting approval until the cows come home, but the key message is hunting is currently receiving a historically high approval rating. This is great, and it's aided by current hunters projecting a good public image to society, being well-educated on wildlife management and habitat enhancement, becoming increasingly engaged with their state and provincial wildlife agencies, and by sharing their bounty with others. And this is one. QDMA members alone shared over 5.8 million venison meals and donated another 7.3 million meals last year. Whether or not you hunt, it's easy to approve of that. Great, great study. And like I said, you know, our hunting heritage is declining in numbers. I think in some numbers I looked up, it's like 5.5% of the population in the United States hunts. That's hunting license sales, 5.4% of the U.S. population or something. So we're a small number. But when you have the approval of 80% of the non-hunting public, that's good. So hunters, keep it up. Our survival depends on it. And the survival of the wildlife, the natural resources depends on it too. Because we fund all this conservation work through Pittman Robertson on the fishing side, through Dingell Johnson. We fund all these initiatives that reintroduce the wild turkey, that go put up wood duck boxes all through the 70s so you can have wood ducks, that reintroduce white-tailed deer. And there are other stories, success stories of the elk. Hello. You know, a lot of that comes through the Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, a lot of that push and all. But a lot of that is funded through monies that hunters raise and donate and contribute to. So, Okay. I've been warned to stay away from this one, but I just can't. My mom warned me not to do this. But it's out there. It's out there. So I'm going to cover it. Outdoor cats are the leading cause of death among both birds and mammals in the United States, according to a new study. Now, granted, this study was a, a study completed in 2013. But the study killing 1.4 billion to 3.7 billion birds per year. And I only say that because you had the press release that the U.S. and Canada have lost more than one in four birds in the past 50 years. Well, hello, look back at this study and you can understand why if cats are killing that many birds annually. The mammalian toll is even higher, concluded researchers from the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, ranging from 6.9 billion to 20.7 billion annually. The announcement, which was published in the Journal of Nature Communications, suggests that feral and owned cats pose a far greater threat than previously thought. One study in 2011 estimated that cats in the United States kill roughly half a billion birds annually. They talked about the study that it's never been attempted before, and it goes through a lot of how they did it. Cats pose the greatest danger to birds and animals living on islands because there are fewer opportunities for these animals to escape. Well, that's true. Cats are responsible for helping drive 33 species of birds, mammals, and reptiles to extinction on islands, including the Stevens Island Wren in New Zealand. Had a hard time measuring the effect of cats on small mammals in the U.S. because they lack precise population counts for these species. Yeah, try to get a population estimate on rats. But eastern cottontails have been established, chipmunks. Goodness gracious alive, it goes on. So, you know, while I'm not saying to get rid of your cat, it will make you think. And it'll also make you look at stuff like this. The press release, new study finds U.S. and Canada have lost more than one in four birds in the past 50 years. It's not my fault or your fault. It could be a cat's fault. All right. I hope you have a great rest of the weekend. As always, make time to get out there, take the back roads when you can, and don't forget the camera. Back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm.